if it pays the bills.
It could be worse.
Yeah.
I could be working in a furniture factory again.
Yeah, there's always that.
That monkey, that!
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dan's Monkey Dance. I'm Chris Hayner.
And I'm Mark Meckes.
How you doing, Mark?
Not bad. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome to the second, I guess, maybe we'll make this like a whole separate podcast, the like movie edition of Dan's Monkey Dance.
Ooh, a spinoff.
A spinoff.
Yeah.
You know, where we review movies and TV shows and whatever. But this week we are here to talk about one of the tentpole pictures of this year, a movie that is being both praised and slammed at the same time, Man of Steel. And I guess we should start with whether or not you like the movie, Mark.
You know, I am dying to find out how this conversation goes myself, because...
Uh-oh.
Well, it's interesting. I think when we talked about Star Trek Into Darkness, I mentioned how I didn't like it, and then... grew to like it.
Right.
And I had a similar feeling here. I walked out of the theater not liking it, but it's kind of grown on me a little bit, I think.
Okay.
But it was weird. I walked out and I couldn't find I couldn't really find anything wrong with the movie. I thought the movie was flawless. I just felt bad for mankind. You know? That this is what we need to make Superman popular, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I personally love the film. I thought, with one or two criticisms aside, I thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm. I've never been a fan of Superman. Mm. And my relationship with Superman goes back to, what was it, 1978?
Yeah. When the
first one came out.
Yeah.
Two experiences that I remember growing up is going to see Star Wars when I was 3. And going to see the original Superman when I guess I was 4.
Wow.
And I remember the experience of going and actually seeing the film. And I guess that's why I'm kind of inclined to like superhero movies.
Okay.
So, but growing up, it was never like, I never had posters of Superman. I never had action figures of Superman. It was always one of those things that I kind of knew about, but not really. And I think when we talked about Into Darkness, I said I wasn't even sold on going to see this movie until I saw the Zod trailer.
Hmm, yeah.
And that had me completely hooked. And me and the guy from work went, they let us off early on a Friday afternoon, the Friday it came out.
Wow.
And we darted over to the nearest theater to go see it. And we both really, really enjoyed it. And it's interesting because there's a lot of people out there that don't. There's a lot of people out there slamming the movie. And I think it's a Superman purist thing that it's not exactly what they remember. Because I think they're comparing it too much to the Donner version.
That's sure to be a big part of it. But I think the other element, and this is one of those things that you know, I kind of realized going later, is this is the first part of a bigger story. And it seems like it's kind of a trend with movies now that you almost can't judge a single movie. When I saw The Hobbit, I left there thinking, but I got to see the other two,
right?
Because you know, Lord of the Rings was one giant movie,
right?
And until I see the other Hobbit movies, I don't really feel comfortable judging that one. And I kind of feel the same way with the Superman movie,
right? And especially with Nolan producing. I mean, Nolan took Batman and made a 3-story arc out of it.
And are you ready for my prediction of where this movie's series is going to go?
Sure.
Okay. Nolan did with Batman. First one featured a villain that tied to Batman's development.
Okay.
Ra's al Ghul.
Right.
Second movie, they bring the main nemesis in, Joker.
Okay.
The third one, they introduce the villain who actually beat Batman at one point, Bane.
Okay.
Superman, first one, had Zod, who ties back to his Kryptonian upbringing.
Okay.
Next one's going to be Luthor.
Right.
And then they'll bring in Doomsday for the third one.
That's probably a pretty good prediction.
Yeah. Now, if you put the first movie in that perspective, then if you're expecting Lex Luthor in the next one, Lex Luthor is really kind of a difficult antagonist for Superman because he has no powers.
Right.
Now, this movie dealt with him being afraid to release his powers, thinking people, you know, that he would scare people and you know, become a bad influence. Well, looking at the death and destruction that was wrecked in this movie, if you introduce somebody with a little bit of political savvy, like Lex Luthor,
right,
he now has a lot of power to start working against Superman's public image.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And he's going to be the one that's like, look at what he brought to the planet, and
yes,
he needs to be gotten rid of, and yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be a far different Lex Luthor than the Gene Hackman
version. Yes. Yes. Which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I've had conversations with people about Man of Steel, and just for anybody who is listening who hasn't seen it, just, we're going to spoil it.
Yeah.
You know, they kept going back to the fact that this wasn't the Superman that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, that's the whole point. It's a modern telling of the Superman legend, which was started in the 30s.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest gripes that I have with Superman Returns is that it's a direct sequel to Superman 2.
Yeah.
And it's set in modern times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really hard to suspend your disbelief when you're like, well, that happened like late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're talking about in the 2000s, where all of a sudden you're like, you're supposed to buy that this dude's only been away for a couple of years.
Oh, they're actually younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're younger. Now there's modern planes, and there's,
yeah,
you know, they're launching a shuttle off the back of a 747. Yeah. And it's like, with all the other story problems aside with Superman Returns, that was one of the hardest things that I like that there was to swallow for me.
Yeah. I think if the story had been good, they might have been able to get past that. But the story wasn't any good. So
no.
That no. Just became emo, a big glaring red flag.
Yeah, emo Superman floating outside a what's-her-name's window, Lois Lane's window, and heard like him just going, woe is me, she doesn't love me anymore. It was like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where we're going with this?
Now, I will say, one of the things I thought in seeing Man of Steel, the one part of Superman Returns that I thought was phenomenal was him rescuing the plane.
Right.
When he first appeared and rescued the plane, it was like, that, you know, if they had just released that 15 minutes of film and just cut the rest of the movie, you know, that was really, really good.
Right.
And this movie, I thought, was all of that. You know, this had that kind of spectacle and tension, and, you know, through the whole thing.
Yeah, this movie
multiplied
by
100.
Yeah, this does not stop.
No.
From the moment it starts to the moment it ends, you're kind of dizzy by the end because there is so much of it. One of the things that I was really afraid of was sitting through another origin story, because it's in the 1978 Superman, it was like, yeah, 45 minutes before you saw him in the outfit.
Which worked for that movie.
Yeah.
For that one, that's what, it, you know.
But it's hard to go back and sit through. Like, in repeat viewings, like, because at some point, I just want to see Superman.
Yeah.
In this, they interwove the origin story in a way that I thought really worked.
Well, they actually did a lot more with the Krypton origin part of it. I mean,
yeah, we spend the first like 20 minutes on Krypton.
Yeah. I thought I was Avatar there for a little while, but still, it was
okay. So, the people that I've had the conversations with at work that hated this movie, one of their main reasons was that Jor-El in one scene flies a dragon.
Yeah.
And I got them all turned around on this point because they were like, that was ridiculous. And the way that I see it is Jor-El is the head scientist on Krypton.
Yeah.
He is making an argument in the beginning of this film that pretty much they've gone through all their resources on the planet. They've mined the core. Mm. The core is going to collapse. Everything's going to blow up. Mm. It feels very much like Star Trek Into Darkness for me, where they tried to take the issues of today and put them into a film and echo it, and in this case, on Krypton. So you have a lead scientist talking to a group of leaders who don't believe in the fact that, you know, we're not in trouble. It's okay. So instead of when Zod shows up and Jor-El's got to get the hell out of there, he's not the type of guy that's going to be in a resource-using spaceship. He's going with the practical eco-hybrid of getting on something that has its own power and riding that to where he needs to go.
Okay.
You know, like, the people that I talked to, they were all... this dude... We actually argued on like an instant messaging service for like half an hour about this point. And in the end, I was like, you just have to think of it in terms of today, because they go out of their way. There's a scene, and I can't remember at what point in the movie it is, but I think it's when Jor-El is talking to Kal-El, and he says, Kal-El says something about like, what happened to you guys? And he says, well, we stopped our space program. We ran out of resources on the planet, and one thing led to another, and the planet exploded. Which, if you take that to modern times, we just got rid of our space program.
Yeah.
There's that, like, everybody's bitching that we're using all the natural resources on the planet.
Sure.
So it felt like it was a morality tale that they're trying to weave in there of, look what happened to Krypton.
Sure.
You know, that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I had an issue with the whole riding the dragon thing at first too, until I kind of, you know, talked about it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, I can live with that.
You know, it's a bigger plot hole to me that if Kryptonians are genetically engineered to be whatever they are on their world, why does Jor-El know how to fight? Because he's not a soldier.
True.
You know,
there are some plot holes.
Yes.
I mean, you know, how does global warming make a planet explode? but come on, that's Superman. That's
right.
You know, there are some things that you just got to kind of go with. And
right, the planet's got to explode. He's got to be sent to Earth.
Yeah.
He's got to be found by Ma and Pa Kent, and
right.
You know, there's certain things you have to hit, but it seemed like anything that wasn't strictly canon, they changed.
Which, you know, so what? What is canon? I mean, heck, you know, the Donner Superman was great, but you know, come on, cellophane S shields or nets.
Yeah, well,
you know, originally Superman couldn't fly. That
right.
was something that was added at one point.
Right.
You know, Jimmy Olsen was added. You know, everything is, you know, he has evolved into what he is because stuff has changed. There
right.
is no set Superman canon.
Well, and that's what like people were bitching on the internet. Like, Krypton isn't ice. Well, okay, if you look at the comic books,
no.
It's not ice. Like, that was a Donner thing. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that came direct. That was only in the movie.
Yes. The one thing, the one issue with Krypton that I had was they weren't around a red sun. And they used the kind of the excuse that the sun was older and wasn't putting out as much radiation.
Okay.
And, you know, it. I just think it works better as red sun, no powers, yellow sun, for some reason, gives them powers. But, I mean, that's all nitpicking stuff.
Yeah.
The other issue that I had up until a point, okay, so Superman, we leave Krypton, and instead of going into Little Naked Baby picks up a car off Pa Kent, we go that Kent, Clark is now 33 years old, and he's working on the deadliest catch, apparently.
Yeah.
Then he starts to see things that remind him of his past, which trigger flashbacks.
Yeah.
Which is all great. I mean, I liked all that. And we get to a point where we find out he's a drifter, and he's kind of been going from job to job, place to place, and overhears two, I guess, military people talking about how they found this ship, and Clark knows that he's from another planet, so he goes and he gets to work on that base somehow.
Right.
And finds the ship, which is technically the Fortress of Solitude for some point. And puts the little key in the thing, and Jor-El pops up, and all of a sudden you get all the backstory for Krypton, and you get all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And he's presented with a suit. And the problem that I had in the beginning was, how does the ship that had crashed 20,000 years ago have a suit from the House of El? Because the big Superman symbol on his chest is not actually an S, it's
right.
a symbol for the house.
Funny you should mention that.
But what I came to find out is there was a prequel comic.
Yes.
That
yes,
explains it.
I haven't read that, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, and
because that was one of the problems I had was the one empty cryo tube.
Okay.
They never explained that, and I was like, well, I mean, it was pretty blatant. What is that supposed to be? You right. know, and they're just never mind.
Right, but apparently in the prequel comic, there's an ancestor of Jor-El's that takes the ship to Earth to make the outpost. And they are part of the House of El, which is why the ship, or the Fortress of Solitude, whatever you want to call it, has that suit.
Yes.
It doesn't explain why it's blue and red when everybody else is in black, but I guess there was like some kind of fashion thing 20,000 years ago where they were, you know, more colorful than what they are today.
Color TVs had just come out, so everything's.
But the one thing that I did like was the explanation for the suit. Like, in everything else, the suit just kind of appears, and all of a sudden, like, he's flying around in tights and whatever. But in this, they actually, like, explain that all of them are wearing those suits.
Right.
Like, Jor-El's walking around, and he's in a Superman suit. It's just black. And, like, when Zod is not in his battle armor, he's got a black suit on with a cape. And it's more than just, hey, I decided to put a big S on my chest. And,
right.
You know, like, for some reason, I remember Lois and Clark, the TV show, where they flashed back to him making a suit, and it was Ma Kent, like, sewing it up. And
which is, I think, what they did in the comics.
Is that what they did in the comics?
I think, one of the comic incarnations, yes.
Okay, well, that just never sat well with me. And I think Nolan coming in and saying you have to make it to kind of be, like, plausible, and coming from a background of Batman where you have the Tumbler, and the Tumbler was there, and the suit, the survival suit that wasn't in production, and all that kind of crap. This felt very much in line with that.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, other people have a problem that it wasn't bright blue and, you know, not bright red. It doesn't look like the comic books, but, you know, those people just need to kind of get over it.
Sure. Sure. You know, at one point, at some point, you have to realize you are talking about a different art form.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, people bitched that the X-Men weren't in their spandex, but it doesn't work.
Exactly.
It does not work for live action characters. Mm-hmm. And even though Henry Cavill, is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever, however you say his last name. He was buff enough to pull it off. You know, it works for certain things, but like when you get down to it, you know, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Cause every carnation is different.
Of course it is.
Like even the Superman Returns suit was different.
Mm-hmm.
It was an homage to the Christopher Reeve one, but you know, that it was still different. So let's see. At some point he meets Lois. He meets Lois when he first gets into the ship. I kind of like what they did with Lois, and I kind of don't like what they did with her. I felt that she was too involved in the story at some point.
Hmm.
And it had to... I think it had to do with when... For some reason, they bring her up to Zod's ship when he shows up.
Hmm.
Like, so Clark finds a ship that's crashed in the ice. He puts the little key in, which sends out this homing beacon. All of a sudden, Zod knows that somebody's there. Not really sure how he figures out it's Kal-El, except for, you know, that's in the story, whatever.
Yeah.
Zod shows up, says, hey, you gotta give up this alien who's been living among you. Kal-El, if you don't surrender within 24 hours, the planet's gonna be sacrificed or whatever, which turns out to be his plan anyway.
Right.
He's gonna destroy Earth no matter what, but... So, oh, yeah. Superman surrenders, has this interesting talk with Lois, who he finds on the ship before... cauterizes a wound, like she knows who he is at this point.
Right.
And then they both get taken up to Zod's ship. And I don't really remember why they brought her, but she goes, and Superman gives her the little key, and she uploads Jor-El into the Zod ship, and he helps her escape, and then he helps Kal-El escape, and at some point she's told how to make this all work, like how to defeat them, and I didn't mind all the reporter stuff, because she's supposed to be a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter.
Yeah.
And the fact that she doesn't fall for, he's wearing glasses.
Right.
Like that all worked for me, but she was in every scene.
True.
And I don't know. I think it was just a little too much.
I kind of liked, and I think the idea that Clark isn't necessarily the smartest guy in the room. You know, Batman is a smart superhero.
Right.
Superman is the brawn.
Right.
So I kind of like the idea of making Lois the brains of the operation. In some way.
Okay.
And I think that they were kind of trying to do that a little bit, you know, make her a little bit more involved in that way. Which I think gives her more character than just the, you know, screaming, hanging from a helicopter. did you see the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2?
Yes.
I love the what makes that for me is the way Lois tricks Superman into revealing that he, or tricks Clark into revealing that he's Superman.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that makes her smarter than him,
right?
Which gives her a place in the universe as opposed to just the sidekick.
Well, I guess it just felt like at the end, it felt like she was overused to a point, because you have all this stuff going on, and we'll get to the end in a little while, but like, she's the only one that survives the plane crash. She's the only one that, you know, she gets rescued a bunch of times. And even at the end, when the big climax happens, they've gone miles away in the city, and she shows up at the end in the subway. And I understand, like, she needs to be there because Superman needs somebody to hug, but
sure.
It just felt like, it felt, this is going to sound real picky, but it felt too comic booky, which I know doesn't make any sense, but like, in comic books, you have the panels and she's got to be here in this panel and then she's got to show up in this panel. But in a movie, especially when you're trying to be as real and grounded as they've tried to be with this, there were certain things that happened that took it out of the realm of real.
But I think they really needed that, because, well, I think it's time to jump to the end.
Okay.
You know, you had that dark ending.
Right.
And, you know, I think really, when you really break it down, the people that didn't like it, and myself included, my first, you know, reaction was when Superman killed Zod.
Right.
That was dark. That was jarring. And I think you almost needed, even if it was a little bit comic booky, you needed to kind of bring it back to a, you know,
right,
happy hug time for a moment there.
He definitely needs somebody there to deal with what he's feeling.
Yeah.
Because he's forced to kill Zod.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was justified. I felt like they gave Zod enough character to, you know, there's that whole line where Superman has him and Zod has this heat vision and he's trying to kill this family. Mm-hmm. And Clark says, stop. And he's like, I'll never stop. This is what I'm made for. I will never stop. And it forces him to kill another Kryptonian, the last Kryptonian besides himself. And it felt very justified to me. Like, people are like, Superman wouldn't kill. And it's like, yeah, but he's making a choice. He's picking humankind over his own kind. And he's doing it in a very matter-of-fact way of like, we're not going to put you back in the Phantom Zone. We're not going to do any of this other crap. The only way to handle this is to kill you. Which, because he's not really an established superhero at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, in the length of the film, he's only been around in the costume for, what, 2 days?
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it, is this is all his first attempt at really letting his power out. He spent his entire life suppressing this power and, you know, being bullied because of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is his, you know, he finally lets loose, and, you know, that kind of, you know, probably an overreaction is what's going to happen.
Right.
To some degree. And, you know, he doesn't have any control yet. He hasn't learned all the tricks. All he has is just brute strength, and in the end, that's what he has to use.
Right, and that's very to what you were saying before with the 3-movie arc thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is setting up Superman for who he becomes.
Right.
It's not who is established. Like, there's a weird thing in the whole Donner Superman where a young Clark Kent walks into the Fortress of Solitude, and the next time you see him, he's Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
And it's like, somehow it's explained that he spends like 10 years in the Fortress of Solitude learning all this stuff from Jor-El.
Yeah.
And
there's a line in there that, you know, yeah.
Yes.
This year, we're going to talk about this.
Yeah. So you don't have that in this movie. He's 33 when he finds a ship, and he is 33 when he kills Zod.
Yeah.
There is no, like, time to learn anything, which leads into, I think, one of the best scenes in the movie, which is when he emerges in the suit for the first time, and you see him, and he walks out into the sun, and the scene where he's learning to fly.
Yes. Yeah, that was good.
Is 5 minutes, if it's even that long, of some of the best storytelling without there being any dialogue.
Yeah.
Because you get the thing where, in an homage to the original Superman, he can't figure out how to fly. He's jumping and he's leaping. He's leaping tall buildings in a single bound type thing. And then he gets to a certain point where he's like, all right, I got to learn how to control this. And that's when he learns to fly. And it's just this beautiful, like, shot. And it's in the trailers where he puts his fist down and all the snow and the rocks kind of vibrate.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah.
And he takes off. And it's like that. See, that's what filmmaking is supposed to be.
That is beautiful.
And that's one of those scenes where, like, no matter what you say about this Superman, there are certain scenes in this that, like, you're going to remember. It's like the plane, the rescuing of the plane in Superman Returns. It's going to be like him learning to fly. It's going to be the Battle of Smallville, and it's going to be the big thing at the end.
Yeah.
Like, that's what people are going to take away from this. And, you know, I think, even if you don't like Zack Snyder as a storyteller, nobody can deny that he has a really distinct visual style. And
oh, yeah.
He's really good at getting that on screen.
Absolutely.
Whether you liked Watchmen, for all the people that had to sit through Sucker Punch, Sucker Punch was a really pretty movie.
Yeah.
It just had a horrible story.
Yeah.
And I think that carries, not the horrible story, but I think his visual storytelling is what carries a lot of this for me.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're kind of on the battles, let's talk about the Battle of Smallville.
Okay.
That was another one of those things where, it doesn't happen often in movies for me, but I found myself leaning forward in my seat, which has only happened a couple times in my movie going experience. First time was in Jurassic Park when the T-Rex is attacking the kids in the car.
Okay.
And it's happened in a couple other times, but the Battle of Smallville for me, for some reason, was an edge of my seat moment. And even though people say, oh, there's all kinds of product placement and all kinds of crap like that, the showdown when Superman is walking towards, what's her name? Zod's wife.
I want to say Ursa. That was
well, and that's a thing. Like it's Ursa and Non.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Like, they're walking down the street, and it's like, I don't care what you call them.
Yeah.
It's the female and the tall guy that doesn't talk.
Right.
But when they're walking towards each other and people are running across the streets and locking doors, and it's building the tension of, you have three indestructible people that are about to throw down, and it's the immovable object and the unstoppable force.
Yep.
Like, there was something about that, like, when this movie comes out on Blu-ray, I'm going to watch those sections over and over and over.
Yeah.
And this was one of those parts. Everything from, like, them being tossed through the gas station to, I don't know if you noticed, but, like, when they attack the planes that are coming in to attack them, there's, I guess, the non-dude rips a canopy off of one of them and then rips the guy's head off.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, all right, that's very cool. That's, like, everything you ever want to see in a Superman movie is, like, people punching and like people, indestructible people, like leaping into the air and knocking things down. And Battle of Smallville was all of that.
You know, that's one of the things that I really thought was well done with this, especially, you know, probably later in the Metropolis fight, but the scale that these relatively tiny people were creating this godlike destruction.
Yeah, it's and it's destruction right. on a grand scale.
Yes.
There's nothing that goes unscathed, especially in Metropolis at the end, but like they pretty much destroy Main Street of Smallville. And there's gigantic explosions and people being thrown into the streets, and you know, mm-hmm. because it's Superman, he just doesn't land, he makes a pothole.
Yeah.
And when he gets knocked to the ground, he doesn't just hit the ground, he creates a big pile of rubble behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And the practical effects and the digital effects work, especially in these fight scenes. There's
yeah.
a couple of places where the visual effects don't really work, but it's not in either one of the battles.
Yeah.
And the guy that I saw the movie with, he was like, you see certain movies and you know, you can tell where they ran out of money in the effects budget. And he yeah. was like, this, they knew exactly where to put all the money.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, we did one big flying scene. Okay, we kind of got that out of the way. Now we're going to do the smaller of the two fights. And then later on, we're going to do the huge, massive one.
Yeah.
Which it, could... It, go ahead.
Again, it kind of reminded me of Lord of the Rings a little bit. You had the... Smallville was the Minas Tirith fight.
Right.
And then Metropolis was the big Minas Tirith.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know everybody's harping on the amount of destruction in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they are people who are indestructible fighting each other.
Another thing I think that did, and again, this is one of those things that I felt that initial, you know, in a world with Superman, no one gets hurt. No one should die. You know, he can save anything. And I think this movie created a world where Superman doesn't save everybody. There is, you know, in some to some degree, a world where Superman is bad.
Right.
To a small degree, at least at this stage in his development.
Right.
So I thought that was, you know, it's a very different take on Superman that, you know, there's a lot of collateral, you know, a lot of people died, a lot of collateral damage.
A lot of people died. But, you know, what I don't understand is if you look at the biggest movie last year was The Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And The Avengers, the last 45 minutes of The Avengers was an alien race pretty much destroying New York, at least several city blocks of it.
Yeah.
This year we have an alien race destroying Metropolis. And you didn't hear last year they weren't like Iron Man let all those people die.
Yeah.
It, you know, because everybody has that stupid idea that Superman saves everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's up in arms because Zod throws him through a building. Well, yeah, Zod throws him through a building. Yeah. What do you expect?
Superman
to
didn't do it.
No.
He just was around.
And you know, I've heard people say, you know, when they turn, so Zod brings this big world engine thing, and he puts that on one side of the planet, and apparently exactly on the other side of the planet is Metropolis. And they turn this thing on and everything from the ground gets pulled up and then slammed down into the ground. And this just happens and it gets bigger and wider and apparently it's changing the density of the planet and screwing with the atmosphere and all this other crap.
Sure.
And people are like, well, why didn't Superman just go at that point to destroy the machine? And it's like, you have to figure out how to stop the Kryptonians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can't just go and destroy it without figuring out how to destroy the Kryptonian ship.
Sure.
So, but everybody was like, oh, well, he let all those people die at that point. Well, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
He's not going to fly to Metropolis. Well, okay. So if he went to Metropolis and saved those people, then what about the people on the other side of the world?
True.
Somebody's going to die.
True.
He can't save everybody.
Well, and, you know, the other part of it, too, is, you know, he was working with the army. They were, you know, he was trying to be a team player. You know, let them take care of one, he'll take care of the other.
Right. And that definitely comes into play later. It's not Superman that destroys the Kryptonian ship.
Mm-hmm.
It's the army. It's humankind defending themselves.
Yes.
You know, and that's when Lois is the only one that survives out of the plane crash. But, you know, they made it a point of showing, I guess it's Jenny Olsen trapped in the rubble.
Oh, yeah.
And Perry White trying to save her.
Like, yeah.
There's that whole thing, too. Superman doesn't come to rescue there.
Right.
And they're prepared to die at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the big machine is dropping things, and it's spreading out, and it's getting closer, and things are crashing around them, and there's just this look between them, and it's like, sorry, I couldn't save us. And then Superman, I guess, destroys the world engine, and then, like, that all stops. But, you know, he's not saving everybody.
Right.
So, I don't understand why people can't look at this as a new aspect to Superman.
I think the thing that is just what is setting off that feeling is the darkness. It is a dark Superman.
Right.
Superman, there have been a million incarnations of Superman, but there's never been a dark one.
Right.
There has never been one where he just broke somebody's neck. You know, there's not, you know, there hasn't been death around Superman this much.
Right.
So that does make it a very different take on the character.
Yeah.
And the world. And that is a little hard to take. Like I said, I walked out of there just feeling not so much that nothing was wrong with the movie, but if this is necessary for Superman to be good, if we can't have that a movie with the kind of optimism and feel good feeling that we had with Christopher Reeve,
right?
That's really sad. But if it is a build towards a character, then I think I can live with it and feel as if it's a step towards something.
And, you know, we're living in a world where the most popular TV show is about a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Like, people don't want shiny happy anymore. People are in this mode right now of death and destruction and apocalypses and things that we can't come back from. So it very much kind of felt like they were playing to that, but, you know, not all of Metropolis was destroyed. The people at the Daily Planet are just smiling and happy when Clark Kent shows up to report for work. So, I mean, people can't have it both ways. You can't be like, well, this isn't Superman, and then be like, what are you watching tonight? Oh, I'm watching Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Or I'm watching Game of Thrones, and, you know, oh, The Red Wedding, wasn't that cool? Like,
mm-hmm.
You can't be okay with it in one place and be like, well, oh, Superman, he's not supposed to do that. Why?
No, because there are different genres. Well, if I go to see a horror movie, I want to see people die. If I'm going to watch, you know, Mary Poppins, I want to hear songs and be happy. And, you know, I don't want to see Mary Poppins pulling out a newsie. You know?
Oh, come on. That'd be maybe. Awesome.
Okay, I take that back.
She starts gunning down all the, chimney sweeps. Come here, Bert. Here, let's hop into a painting painted with your blood.
I'm smelling sequel.
Yeah, see, there you go.
Yeah.
Is there any part of the movie that you saw that you had any kind of issues with?
I think, you know, like I say, the only real part I just kind of threw my hands up was you know, the just blatant killing of Zod. Okay. You know, I wanted to see something clever. I wanted to see a but like I said, this isn't, you know, Superman isn't a clever hero.
Right.
That's Batman is the clever one.
Right.
Lois is clever. And, you know, I wanted to see it, but I understand why it wasn't. It's just, and like I said, in the bigger scheme of things, I think it's going to create something that is going to be very usable in sequels.
Right. The only other thing that I really had any kind of issue with was the handling of Pa Kent's death. Mm. One of the things that I truly did like about Donner Superman is with Pa Kent dying of a heart attack,
mm-hmm.
it's something Clark can't fight against. There's, and they make it a point of saying it in the film, all those powers and you couldn't save them.
Yeah.
Death is the one thing that Superman cannot fight.
Mm.
And to put Pa Kent in the middle of a tornado where he was like, no, don't come for me.
Yeah.
Where he could have, even though he's not really sure of his powers yet.
Mm-hmm.
He was sure
enough that he could have.
Yeah. He could have gotten out there
mm-hmm.
and saved him. And okay. So 10 people under the overpass would have seen it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well maybe that's what should have put Clark out on this like hobo journey of I'm going to go from job to job, but putting changing it to where Pa Kent dies in a tornado, I was like, I just, that was a wrong choice.
But that was, that gave to me, that was more tragic though, because it was, because he could have, you know, in when Glenn Ford was Pa Kent, there was nothing Clark could have done.
Right.
In this case, there was something he could have done, but his inaction is going to live with him forever. And now, you know, that driving him gives him something to push a little bit more against. I also think that I thought something had gone now.
Okay. I mean, I can kind of see that, but I don't know. It always felt like death being that one thing that those powers can't fight against was always a powerful image. And like, I think if that was one of the messages in this, where you get to the end and he's got to kill Zod, I just think it might have played into the character a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that was, actually, that was something I really liked about this story, was the growing up being bullied, and any time he could have done something.
Right.
You know, and he didn't. And that just, you know, as part of his origin, that just escalated. You know, he could have done this, but he didn't. But he could have done this. And then finally culminating with the, he could have saved his father easily, and he didn't.
Right. Okay. And then that turns into him traveling around saving.
Yeah.
People. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that.
I really liked that as a different take on him. And then, you know, kind of going into the final battle and, you know, all these people dying and finally saying, okay, I couldn't prevent death. And then causing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the other things that I really liked in this film, I liked the whole, the Kryptonians weren't used to our atmosphere. and they had to acclimate to it.
That was interesting.
That was a take that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
That because the two worlds would be so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's that whole thing with Ma Kent saying, you know, it was the hardest thing to listen to you try to breathe as a child.
Oh, yeah.
And him, like, having to acclimate to it. And then, you know, okay, the Kryptonians show up, and now it's like, well, okay, that's kind of cool that, like, they've got to wear these breathing masks because they can't, they're not used to our atmosphere. And only when they're not breathing their atmosphere do they start to get these powers.
Right.
Like, that, I thought, was an awesome addition to, like, the Superman mythos of, you know, it's not just a little naked baby lifting the car off of Pa Kent. It's, he almost, like, died when he first got here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the negativity of the powers was a really interesting take. You know, even, like, the X-ray vision, you know, having to learn not to.
Yeah. All of, like, and it's almost like a puberty thing where all of a sudden he's like hearing everything and he's seeing through his classmates and he's freaking out because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
He doesn't know why. Like, at that point, he's got no idea that he's from another planet.
Right.
So all he knows is that he's different from everybody else and he can, like, make door handles heat up and stuff. And he's not really sure why. And, you know, there's that whole great moment where Ma Kent comes in and she's like, listen to my voice, make the world small.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
That was really, really great.
Yeah. And, you know, it was almost everybody contributes Superman's, not ethic, but like his morals to the teachings of Ma and Pa Kent.
Yeah.
And while Pa Kent was more in this movie was more like, you got to kind of hide who you are because you don't know what they're going to do to you. She was that focus that he needed of, you know, when this stuff is going on, you got to kind of like rein it in and only see the things you want to see.
Right.
And I think there could have been a little bit more of that. And maybe a little bit more of that from Pa Kent, but I mean, just that kind of stuff alone. I mean, that's what, and I don't know if you contribute that to like Goyer or that's a Zack Snyder thing, but you know, those moments were so intimate where it's just like Diane Lane's face up against a door. And then you got this little kid that's scared in the closet and you don't really have to play off anything but that to get the emotions of what's going on between the two characters.
Now that I thought tied a lot to Batman Begins, you know, I felt some of the same vibe of, you know, Alfred saying, you know, why do we fall down?
So,
you know, those type of moments.
Yeah. I guess that's like, I don't know if that's Nolan's influence then, but I didn't make that connection until now.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else did I write down?
I thought it was really interesting to see some of the ties, you know, even especially the subtle ones I've been catching up on later, ties to the rest of the DC universe.
Like the Wayne Enterprise satellite?
Yes. Well, yeah. That and I'm trying to remember them. There was a reference to Blast Comics,
which is really
from Booster Gold.
Okay.
Star Labs, of course.
Right.
There was a talk. I don't remember what it was, but the thing with the fire at the state the
oil rig
off the fish the oil rig.
Yeah.
When he's in the water and looks up and sees the whales, that was a that somehow that tied into Aquaman sending the whales.
Oh, really?
Kind of subtle. but you know, that was talked about. The empty pod, again referring back to the preview comic, is apparently Supergirl.
Right.
You know, she's the one that was in that pod. What else?
Well, and all the LexCorp things.
LexCorp, obviously, yeah. That was pretty blatant.
Yeah. That showed up everywhere towards the end.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there were LexCorp signs everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I say, I'm pretty positive he'll be in the next movie.
Yeah. Well, they're already talking about, I guess the front runner for him is, I want to say his name is Mark Strong. He's the guy that played Sinestro in Green Lantern.
Really?
And he played the father in Kick-Ass, that Kick-Ass goes and kills at the end.
Huh.
He's been in a bunch of stuff, and apparently he can play like suave and he can play slimy all at the same time.
Hmm.
So they're saying he's like the perfect like version of Lex Luthor for this.
Yeah. Okay.
And one of the parts that I absolutely loved from this film, and it's all visual effects, is Lois is up in General Zod's ship, and Jor-El is leading her out. And there's these camera moves where it's Jor-El pointing in a direction and the camera following Lois, and when she goes through the door, Jor-El is standing there.
Pointing
in the next direction. And they do it a bunch of times, and I sat there and I giggled in the theater because I was like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Because it was like one continuous camera move.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was one of those things where they just had multiple people in Jor-El costumes standing and then they just replaced the head. Mm. Or they took him and digitally put him in everywhere, but it was flawless.
Yeah.
And those are the little things that I appreciate. Like, being a video editor and all that kind of stuff, I'm like, I know how hard that is. And I know what it takes to do that. And it's like, if it's done really well, it's like, okay. And like, in contrast to that, like, when he's on the oil rig and he comes out and he's on fire.
Oh, yes.
That didn't look really good to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's...
I mean, he's a dude on fire. Like, that's really hard to pull off.
It is.
Without burning skin and all this other crap that goes on. Like, why didn't his facial hair burn? Like, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was so. The oil rig looked good, but when they got to the scene with Jor-El, I was like, oh, okay. That was really cool. Let's see. What else do I have written down? I like the fact that they only called him Superman once.
That was neat.
And yes. I kind of feel like that was a missed opportunity for a cameo from somebody. Like, they give the throwaway line of Superman's coming. And the general says, Superman? And he was like, well, that's what they're calling him.
Yeah,
I kind of felt like that could have been like a really good cameo of like a comedic actor. And for some reason, I keep seeing Bill Murray in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, just in there and out, and you deliver the one line and you're kind of naming him, you know, that kind of thing.
Speaking of cameo, I saw something online today that they were talking about a shot, and I'm trying to remember exactly where it was in the movie, but it was just a Harry Cavill looking and kind of flashing, and there's a few frames there that look like they put in Christopher Reeve's face.
Have you seen that? I saw the picture, but for the life of me, I can't figure out where that would have been in the movie.
I remember a point in the movie thinking, wow, he looked exactly like Christopher Reeve right there. And I think that was the scene. But I don't know if it was just he nailed the look or if they actually did something with it.
The only place that I could really see something like that might be when Zod is in Kal-El's dream and there's all those like flashing lights and like he's kind of telling him his plans, and the world engine comes down and things are like blowing around him, and he's kind of like shit's flashing around him.
Yeah.
Like all, like they did a shot where all of a sudden it was like Christopher Reeves and then it was back. Cause it, from what I had read, it was only, it's only like a really, like a couple of frames.
Right.
Like just a real quick thing.
Yeah.
Let's see if. Man of Steel cameo. Yeah, I saw that picture and I was like, I can see how. Well, here it is. Let's see. Oh, it's when he is, he goes to fight the world engine and like the back of the thing opens and the Matrix looking thing comes out with the, like the claws, and he's,
okay.
He's at the bottom of like the beam and he's okay. Looking up and before he flies up and destroys it.
Yeah.
That's supposedly where it is.
Okay.
And on movienews.moviephone.com, they did a story where they actually have, like, the part. And you can kind of see where it switches.
Hmm.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice homage to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How did you feel about all the church references in it?
You know, it's funny. Going back to the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Right.
I still remember the kind of chill that ran up my spine when Marlon Brando, you know, at the end of the big long teaching many year rant said, "And that's why I gave them you, my only son." That's like, oh boy, this is Jesus. Okay. So that's been a part of Superman, I think. It's there.
Right. I mean,
why not?
I mean, I'm no, anybody who listens to the show knows that I have no qualms about people knowing that I'm an atheist. And the part where he's in the church, and then later you find out he's 33, and then you tie it together that he's the only son of Krypton who's come to save us.
Yeah.
You know, I like all that kind of stuff with being tied together with Jesus. I mean, it makes a lot of sense within the story of, you know, this felt like it was a little more blatant. Like one of the things that I saw on Reddit was, before the movie opened, because of all the product placement from Nokia and Sears and 7-Eleven and all that, they had already made like $180 million before the movie ever opened.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And there was a guy on Reddit who put, I wonder how much all those sponsors paid to be in there. And it put Nokia and I think it was Sears, and it was like, and then the last one was like Christianity. And I was like, well, that's kind of funny. But I mean, this seemed more blatant to me than past incarnations of Superman.
Well, I think it was probably used a little bit more. Like I say, in the original, Marlon Brando had that one line.
Right.
And then it was just, you know, it was subtext.
I mean, it's kind of weird because if Clark's growing up in Kansas and he's told he's an alien.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas is kind of middle America and part of the Bible Belt. And
sure.
Like, growing up in that atmosphere, he would know that, like, in Christianity, that he's basically the disapproval of God. Like, there's a whole nother group of people out there. We're not alone. Like, it kind of goes against everything that, like, some Christianity preaches. So it's like, why would he go to church if he knew, like, I don't know, maybe it's just me being an atheist.
Probably, yeah. The church, the Vatican has said that aliens don't negate God. So, I mean, he doesn't necessarily negate it, I think. But there is this case that his powers make him godlike.
Right.
Therefore, you know, that might be the only thing more powerful than him if it exists. So there would be kind of a, you know, I can see a little bit of a latching onto that, especially, like you say, growing up in the Bible Belt, where that is, you know, hammered into you, and that's, you know, going to churches, that's just what you do.
Right.
You know, so I think story structure wise, it's more of a acknowledging that Superman is so godlike that there is a acknowledgement there, which, and that, again, that might be just building up to introducing Wonder Woman and having that whole pantheon of gods
right
introduced.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, because it does feel like the first act of a 3-act film.
At least, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're talking Justice League, you're talking a whole bunch of other superhero stuff.
It's hard to really place this as like a single film.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, it's probably just my own issues, but
I didn't really see that as, it didn't stand out to me.
Okay.
Really. You know.
Yeah, and I mean, even Jor-El in this movie, he says, as Kal-El is being lifted up into the ship, he makes a comment, there he'll be a god.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess I just felt it was kind of more in your face than previous stuff. And when you think, like, it was done by, like, Superman was created by two Jewish kids.
Well, yeah.
You know, a little weird, but whatever.
Sure. But, you know, that's been kind of the rumble between the difference of DC and Marvel all along, is that Marvel's characters are so godlike. You know, Marvel characters have a little bit more basis in reality, a little bit.
Yeah.
Smaller.
Yeah, the way that I'd always heard it was like DC is more born with powers or obtaining powers through whatever, like and then Marvel is like being bit or, you know, you're a mutant or more technology based. Except for Batman. You know, however that works, but okay,
yeah, a little bit more magic, and I guess, and
yeah.
See,
there was one other thing. What the hell was it? God, why can't I remember now? I don't know. I can't remember.
I don't either.
So,
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Yeah, we've talked about how this is a little bit harder to judge because it's part of, you know, part of a bigger thing. Do you see that as kind of a trend in movies in general? I mean, you know, I mentioned The Hobbit, you know. I think Star Trek had some of that.
Well, definitely The Hobbit. I mean,
yeah, that's pretty blatant.
Because you know it's one book and they're doing it in three separate tales.
And they filmed them all at once, so it's
I mean, we could talk about The Hobbit at some point where, you know, at the end I was like, why don't the eagles just fly them to the mountain? Like, why do they have to drop them off and they have to walk all the way there? Like, you know, they could have done it in one movie had they, whatever. But I feel like it's definitely in the realm of superhero movies. They don't ever make one just to make one.
No.
Like, every character is a franchise to them. Mm-hmm. And it comes from years of books. It's years of storytelling. It's years of miniseries. And I think that when Marvel set out with Iron Man, Iron Man was just testing the waters to see if people were ready for, like, modern day superhero films. Yeah. Because there wasn't, up until that point, it was like Daredevil and it was X-Men, and the Spider-Man franchise had kind of been successful, but then they destroyed it with Spider-Man 3. Mm. Even Spider-Man, they never set out to make just one. But there have been
franchises. Superman, you know, it didn't, you know, only a couple of them were any good, but, you know, you had those. You had the Batman, again, you know, had a couple of good, strong ones before it fell apart. But
well, and that's the thing. They always fell apart. Like,
yeah,
it never got better. It only got worse. Like, mm-hmm. and even like Superman, you can argue that Superman 2 might be a little stronger than Superman.
Well, again, those were 1 and 2 were filmed together.
Together, right? Exactly.
And then, you know, 2 went off on, you know, changes, but still, yeah. Right.
So you have like you have that, like, Batman. I think the first Tim Burton Batman was probably the strongest out of those four. But mm-hmm. I think when it came time for, like, when they did Batman Begins, it was never, well, we're only going to do one of these.
True.
Like, they were going to find a way to do part two, no matter what.
Yeah.
Because Chris Nolan had always said, we envisioned it as a three-act structure. You had the beginning, the middle, and the end.
Sure.
And I think Marvel took that one step further and said, not only are we going to do a beginning, a middle, and the end, but we're going to throw things in between, and everything's going to connect.
Yeah.
And the one,
maybe that's the difference. It was set as a three-act play, whereas, like, the first Superman was like, well, let's just keep this going until it falls apart.
Right.
You know, having specifically aiming for three movies gives you a little bit more control.
Well, yeah, because you can see where the story's going.
Right.
Like, they did Superman 1 and 2, and then, like, Superman 2 was really popular, so they're like, well, let's do a 3. Well, that's how you get Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
And good Superman fighting evil Superman. Like,
yeah,
they didn't know that's where the story was going to go. And
right.
And then, okay, well, that's done. Hey, that made a lot of money. We should do a part 4.
Right.
You know, when they should have just been like, hey, 1 and 2, that's okay. Everybody stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I felt about Batman. Like, you have Batman, that's okay. Batman Returns, okay. A little weirder than the first one.
Yeah.
And then you get to Batman Forever, and it's like,
yeah,
we just start ratcheting up the stupid.
Yeah.
Until you have Batman carrying around a Batman Express card.
Yeah.
But I think Marvel hit on some weird formula that DC is desperately trying to capture.
Good move or bad move, do you think? To copy it, or should they be trying
to
be their own entity?
Well, they're trying to be different by doing Justice League and then doing smaller stories. Mm. Like, and I kind of think that that's going to be a problem.
Because it seems like it.
You have to introduce Wonder Woman. You have to introduce, you know, Nolan has gone on record as saying that his Batman does not live in the same universe as Man of Steel.
Yep.
So it's going to be a completely different person. Well, you're going to have to introduce him at some point.
Exactly.
And you don't want to, like, just, hey, there's a guy in Gotham.
On the other hand, do you? I mean, is there anybody who doesn't know who Batman is?
Well,
do you have to do another origin? I mean, you said not, already. You're tired of the origins.
I don't think for Batman, because he's established. But like, if you're gonna do Wonder Woman, and if you're gonna bring like Martian Manhunter into it,
yeah,
I don't think that stuff you can just drop on the public and be like, here you go, we're gonna explain it later.
Okay.
They announced, I guess, Warner Brothers, and you know, the thing about Warner Brothers is they own DC. They didn't do what Marvel did and give out different properties to different companies.
True.
To where Spider-Man can never be in an Avengers movie, or a Fantastic Four movie can never interact with the Avengers the Avengers Tower or whatever.
Right.
They have access to every single character that DC's put out. They should be able to put together a killer team movie. But they've already talked about fast-tracking Superman 2 or Man of Steel 2 to open next year.
Yeah, that sounds crazy.
That's a mistake.
Yeah.
And then doing Justice League the year after? Like, the only reason they should even contemplate doing another Man of Steel movie before Justice League is if they have to introduce characters before you get to Justice League. Like,
yeah,
you introduce the new Batman as Lex Luthor is trying Luthers. To do business with Wayne yeah. Enterprises. And Wayne thinks that there's a problem, so Batman comes to Metropolis. Mm-hmm. Like, and then somehow Wonder Woman shows up, and hey, Green Lantern's yeah. here. And like, just to introduce the characters.
Yeah.
Before you deal with that. But there's no way they should fast track if it's just going to be Man of Steel.
No.
I mean, they fast tracked Iron Man 2, and that arguably is the weakest part of the Phase 1 movies for Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're talking about, like, I didn't really enjoy Thor that much, but they didn't rush it, and it told a decent story enough to set up the Avengers.
True.
Like, Marvel knew what they were doing, all except for Iron Man 2. Like, Iron mm-hmm. Man 2 was, hey, you got to get in there, and you got to make a movie that's going to set up the Avengers. And then we'll go to Thor, and then we'll go to Captain America, and then we'll get them all together.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't rush Man of Steel 2. That's going to be their downfall. They can't get greedy.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
You know, they need to take all of the praise and the criticism for Man of Steel and look at it and say, how do we make the Dark Knight of the Superman world?
Yeah. I could see, you know, if they really, you know, God, we got to have something next year. Throw together a Flash movie or something. You know, yeah. He's somebody that you can, you know, if it flops, you can save yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You can have it. But, you know, keep your like, big name people. Do them right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't. I mean, I saw that and I was like, that's it. If they do that, if they come out and they announce they're actually doing that, they're done.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be any good.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things about this movie was they had a really long lead time with the story and the effects.
Well, devil's advocate, though. If they did build this with the next movies already planned out, you know, maybe they'd already have a solid script.
Well, and that's the thing that nobody's really privy to is where are they with this planning stuff? I mean, Marvel's very out there about going, these are the movies you're getting, and this is the direction we're going.
Right.
Where DC is like, well, we're going to do Man of Steel, and then maybe we're going to do Justice League. And we're going to see how Man of Steel does before that we greenlight Justice League.
They sound very confused and messed up.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you justify, like, they'd have to come out and say, hey, guess what? We knew that Man of Steel was going to be such a big hit that we've already got a script.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got we've got everybody signed on who's going to be in this next movie. And we're already in pre-production.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that. They're, you know, they made a big deal about saying, well, Zack Snyder might direct Justice League and he might direct the next Man of Steel. But we're really going to have to see how this goes. Well, they should already have everybody in place.
Yep.
You know, like, and Marvel's the perfect counterbalance to that. Like after the Avengers hit $1 billion, they were like, hey, guess what? Joss Whedon, he's going to be involved in the planning of every movie of Phase 2.
Hmm.
Because he's got to get it to the Avengers 2.
Yeah.
He's got to make sure it all fits when you get there. And that all the pieces come together in a believable way.
Which makes so much sense.
Right. And DC's going, no, we'll do Man of Steel 2 next year.
Yeah, we'll just see what we throw together here. Yeah.
Yeah. And oh, it's going to be such a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
DC, if you're listening, don't do it.
Yeah.
All right. So to wrap up, where do you put Man of Steel amongst Superman movies?
Well, it's definitely the third best.
Okay.
I want to wait to see the rest of the series before, yeah, the rest of the series, the overall series, okay. I would imagine being better than anything before, but I'm still with the Donner Christopher Reeve version.
And where do you put it against other modern day comic book movies?
It's tough because I've always been a much bigger DC fan than Marvel.
Okay.
And so for that reason, I was really, really excited to see it, and I really wanted to see it done well. I like this universe, so I enjoyed it. Probably more than any of the Marvel movies. Yeah, I'm gonna put it above any of the Marvel movies.
Okay. You think it's on par with the recent Batman trilogy?
Probably. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. With the caveat that the Dark Knight trilogy fit Batman.
Right.
This is more of a departure for Superman.
Okay.
At least in this stage of his development.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. How about you?
I definitely think it fits in the universe with Batman. I mean, I like the grittier, more realistic aspects to the movie. As far as modern day comic book movies, there's been a lot with Marvel that I can pick apart as far as like plot holes and things that they're doing just because they have to get the characters somewhere. And this movie from start to finish felt like it was coherent. It did have plot holes and it did have things that could have been tightened up and nitpicky stuff, but in the end, this was the Superman film I always wanted to see. You know, my favorite part of Superman 2 is the fight in Metropolis.
Sure.
And this was that on a huge scale.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And maybe it comes from watching the last memory of Superman being Superman Returns, where he doesn't throw a punch.
Yeah.
Superman does not throw a punch at all. Like, the closest you get is him stopping the two guys with the gun where they shoot him in the eye.
Right.
Like, that's one of those things where, like, he didn't punch anything.
True.
He didn't really use his strength for anything. And in this, it's like, we're going to give you that times a million.
Yeah.
And like I said, the things like the battles in Metropolis and the Battle of Smallville and all that kind of stuff just rang for me. And I'm...
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's because I'm a product of first-person shooter games or whatever that is, but this is the Superman movie I always wanted.
Yeah.
And
I never once imagined the Superman being shot with bullets that bounce off him and then ducking when he threw the gun at him.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, and the one thing that I will say that I wish they had done in this, especially when it came to the end fight with Zod, is it would have been nice if the Kryptonians could have bloodied each other just a bit.
Hmm. Yeah.
I really, really disliked The Amazing Spider-Man. But the one thing that I really liked about that film was that Peter Parker comes home black and blue. And he comes home looking like he's been in fights.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like when they, it was blow to blow between Zod and Superman, that those two Kryptonian forces would have been able to at least hurt each other. I mean, he kills Zod.
Oh, yeah.
So it's possible for them to hurt each other.
Yeah.
But it was just like, hit him, he goes through a building. He comes back, he hits the other guy, he goes through a building. And nothing's, there's no blood, there's no black and blue. I just think it would have added to it a little bit. But again, I'm just being kind of nitpicky.
Yeah, I can agree with that, though.
So, I mean, all in all, though, I mean, I don't buy many Blu-rays because I'd rather just wait until it's on Netflix or whatever. But this is one of those movies that I will buy the day that it comes out.
Nice. Yeah.
So, I mean, for what it's worth, so far this year, it's been a pretty decent crop of movies. And even though there's been some stumbling stuff and like some really out there parts to some of these movies, I think this, while I don't think it's going to beat Iron Man 3, I think it should.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with that.
This should, for all rights, be a billion-dollar movie.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to get there.
Hmm.
It dropped off a lot in its second week of release by over 50%.
Wow.
So, I just...
Well, it seems like it's had a lot more mixed reviews.
Yes.
Than, you know, for the reasons we've discussed, I'm sure.
Well, and Iron Man has a built-in audience.
Right.
Iron Man has the momentum of the Avengers behind it. So, of course, it's going to do business. But I think with Superman Returns being the last taste in anybody's mouth of Superman, especially on the big screen.
It's an uphill battle.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle. And then you're changing Superman in a way where purists don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So for every good that it does, like, people are finding detractors that are keeping people away from the movie theater.
Yeah.
But it's made its money back, so we're gonna get something next.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that even though people don't like it, people are talking about Superman and people are talking about making it like another good superhero film.
True.
And if Batman is any indication, like, Batman Begins was okay. It wasn't the best superhero movie ever, but that led to The Dark Knight.
Exactly. Exactly right.
And that's what this has to do. They can't and they can't rush this in the production and hope to get a Dark Knight.
No.
So I'm just kind of hoping.
Yep.
But anyway. What movie do you want to do next?
What is coming up next?
Do you have plans to see Pacific Rim?
That looks like a must-see.
Okay.
Let's shoot for that.
Okay.
When is that out?
That's out July 12th.
July 12th, okay.
Yeah. And then the following month is Elysium, which is the Matt Damon, Neil Blomkamp film.
Yeah.
Which kind of looks really interesting, too.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I think once, like, the summer dies down, we can expand this to do like TV shows, like, cause I really want to talk. Did you watch Fringe when it was on?
I did. I kind of lost track and I finally got it on Netflix and I'm caught up to where I was and I'm back into that.
Okay. Cause
so that'd be good.
Cause I want to discuss Fringe. Because I didn't find it until it was on Netflix.
Ah.
And I'm watching like two episodes a night because I can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
So like we can do any of that kind of stuff.
Might be fun to talk some classic movies too.
And I was just about to say that, like, we can talk about any of the older movies, you know, any of that kind of stuff, and just kind of keep this going.
Sure.
So where can people find your work, Mark?
I find everything at entireprizeenterprises.com.
And that's both of your webcomics?
All three of them, yeah.
All three? It's Saucer Seekers,
and Abby's Agency. Okay. Yeah.
And they can find out info about your game?
Yep. Steam Spy, and also my book, Acting for Artists.
Okay. So go there, and you still do the other podcast?
I haven't done that in a while, but that would be the place to see it if it as soon as it pops back up.
And is that on like iTunes and that kind of stuff, or is it just on the website?
It should still be on iTunes, I would think.
And that's podcast?
Podwarp 1999.
Podwarp 1999. Mm-hmm. So everybody needs to go listen to that.
Yes.
And if you want to get in touch with me, you can always send me an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. If you want to talk about, you know, how John's missing from these or whatever. He doesn't even know we're doing this.
Nice.
So
you're recording a show with him too?
Yeah, actually next week people are going to get two episodes.
Wow.
We're going to oversaturate it. It's going to be great.
Nice.
Which is why this could be like a spin-off, you know.
That's
true. Could be like Dance Monkey Dance Movie Edition.
Cool.
Or Pop Culture Edition, or, you know, whatever. So, you know, do all the stuff that we talk about on Dance Monkey Dance, rate us on iTunes, tell your friends, listen on Stitcher, all that good crap. And let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is Mark.
Have a good week.